Hello, welcome to the Lately in PHP podcast. This is episode number 23, and this time we're starting something new, an experimental thing, which is basically to record and actually transmit the podcast recording live to whoever may be attending. And probably this is not the best day to record. Only Hernani came here to the podcast. Hello, Hernani. How are you doing?
Hello, Manuel. I'm doing great. Lots of things to talk about. I'm glad to be here and see if this goes as a different experience.
Yes, it certainly will go. Actually, we already recorded
The JS classes, right?
Right, the first edition of the JS classes.
Oh, I see some little elephants there.
Right, these ones.
Yeah.
Basically, these are the well-known PHP mascots, actually. There is a big one and a small one. And, but actually, as I mentioned previously, there will be a new one which will look like the original PHP mascot.
From PHP classes.
Right, PHP classes mascot. I'm trying to showing it. It in the, the screen. This is a prototype. This is not the final version of the new mascot. In the end, it will look like exactly as you see in the PHP classes site. This is just a test. They are still iterating. Hopefully it will look much closer to the logo used in the PHP classes site, which is basically a creation of Ifat Hamid, a lady, we'll say, that created the current design, the current theme of the PHP classes site. We are actually moving on to the actual podcast. And today we have several interesting topics to talk about, starting from the just released PHP 5.4.1 that was released yesterday. Today is already 27, and yesterday it was released, both PHP 5.4.1 and the PHP 5.3.11. Well, there is not much to say about these revisions of PHP. Probably the greatest new thing that was introduced is the support for Apache 2.4, which was not previously working. The build was not working with that of Apache version, but now it seems to be working. I have not tried it yet, but I actually intend to upgrade the PHP 5.3 to this revision 11. And mainly because it contains a security vulnerability fix done by Stefan Esser on and a way that magic codes are handled. I do not use magic codes anywhere, but since it seems to be a security vulnerability, it's always good to upgrade. And are you already using PHP 5.4? Are you planning?
Yes, I'm planning to do an upgrade. I'm still with a 5.3.
Right.
5.3 something. Can't recall.
Yeah. Well, personally, I'm not planning any upgrade anytime sooner than when I really need it. And at least for me, PHP 5.4 does not provide anything that I really need, like traits.
Well,
it's interesting, but I do not have a great interest on them. PHP as it is already good enough for me. I mean, prior to PHP 5.4, but other people may want to upgrade. For instance, the use of the built-in web server, which is mainly meant for development environment. It's interesting, but you don't need to upgrade your version in the server.
And eventually it can also represent a problem, because when you're doing development, you should develop within the hosting environment that you will plan to deploy. So if you use Apache, then you have to test it with Apache. But I understand that for small testings, it's a valid improvement for the solution.
Yes, I'm sure several people were expecting PHP 5.4 to be released to use the new features. And we don't know yet if it has great adoption. It will probably only have adoption on environments on which the developer somehow controls, decides the version that is available. And we don't really need it much, but people that need it to take advantage of those features will appreciate it. Anyway, we talked a lot about PHP 5.4 features in past episodes, so there's no need to go through the features again. We are going now to move on to something else that has been happening in the PHP world. Actually, this month was sort of intense. I'm not sure if it was intense in terms of importance, but there was a topic that is discussed.
Little heat.
Well, a little bit is just a way of saying it was quite intensively.
No, I mean a little heat on the topic.
Right.
Like warm discussion.
Yeah, and the topic that I'm referring to is basically the proposal to have a sort of a variant of PHP source file that does not allow those PHP start and end tags. So the regular PHP scripts are basically meant to be some HTML or something else, and with PHP embedded on it, using those PHP and start and end tags. So the proposal is to sort of not exactly abolish, because they still want to support the current form of PHP source files.
It seems that this is an RFFC proposed, right? And they are trying to separate the mixed PHP with HTML and pure PHP scripts, as far as
right.
I could understand, in order to facilitate some specifics on frameworks related code and as well as the naming conventions, etc.
Yeah, well, actually that's probably the ironic part of the proposal, because the proponents seem to want to stop people from, or at least discourage people from mixing HTML templates inside the PHP, or vice versa, wherever you want to see it. And what they propose is to have a new type of PHP source file that only includes PHP code. And the current way of embedding HTML or some other kind of output in the middle of PHP would be disallowed. And I think the ironic part is that many frameworks, many MVC frameworks, they propose the use of PHP files. Actually, would be HTML templates with PHP embedded on them. And this somehow means that they still want to have that forever, embedding PHP code in the middle of HTML or whatever is the output format. And anyway, we're just talking about this because the discussion is always quite intense.
Oh, yeah. And what would you think about having this adopted? I mean, are you up to it, or what's your preference?
Well, personally, I do not care, because even if I was in favor of implementing a specific alteration in PHP engine to support those different types of PHP source code, I probably would not care. But for those that want to use those PHP-only code, they can do it now. The only thing that they still have to put those PHP start and end marks in their source files.
Yes.
So all this discussion because they do not want to put those marks seems exaggerated at this concern.
I mean, I'm sure that there are some other important things to care about, right?
Well, right. But regarding this proposal, the discussion was so intense that I probably missed maybe some important arguments in favor of it. But the best argument I still in favor of it was the that they sort of are concerned that sometimes you use PHP start and end marks, and for an accident you enter an additional line break, and that may break PHP code, like for instance triggering the issue of the content type headers.
Yeah.
And well, but well, okay, I understand that it's a concern. It happens. Actually, it happened to me some time ago, but it doesn't happen to me every time. And I'm not sure if all this discussion is justified. It seems that somebody just started with the idea, and everybody else wanted to give their opinion. And there is not just one RFC. From what I counted, there are at least three RFCs that basically propose the same, just slight variant of the same idea. I think because I really did not have much patience to go through all the proposals. But well, for me, it's like you said. I don't intend to use it, so I'm not really concerned. I just wanted to mention it because there is this intense debate and. From what I could understand, it did not yet end, and probably people will keep talking about it. And it's just amazing how something that may not really be necessary to be part of PHP raises so much, such a great discussion, actually, a flame war. And well, anyway, that's just my perspective. I don't know if you have a similar perspective.
No, yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, it should, those changes probably are useful for some people, otherwise it wouldn't be even proposed. But yeah, normally the changes within the PHP engine or the PHP core itself, it's kind of problematic and it brings lots of ins and outs, and it's always a struggle in that sense.
Well, anyway, there were also other proposals. Despite this proposal itself took a lot of discussion, there were other proposals that did not get so much attention, but I think it probably would be worth mentioning. There was one that was sort of proposing, or at least reviving an old topic, discussing whether PHP function names should be case sensitive or be case insensitive, just like they are currently. And the main argument in favor of making it case sensitive is that if you use certain characters to be represented in Unicode, UTF-8, the upper and lower case version of those characters is just not a matter of changing one byte. And and for me, I just wonder, well, is it really something normal to write PHP code using non-ASCII characters? And any in Portuguese, I don't know if you use names in Portuguese in your code, but you don't, right?
No. Especially when there are special characters, I try to keep everything in English. Sometimes you just don't care and you write some variables names in Portuguese, but I try to avoid it. And normally what I do is I use a spell correction tool just to make sure that it can understand everything. And I do this such as a report tool for the code when I'm looking into the code. But yes, I've never had the experience of having to write variables with special words or special characters.
Yeah, well, for me this is a bit odd because I also... despite my mother language is Portuguese, and which has some non-ASCII characters, I'll never use them. Actually, I was not even sure if PHP supported non-ASCII characters in names, the functions, and so. But for those that
I don't think I've ever tried as well, so I can't tell. I never ever used the special word or accent or on a variable to see if it works.
Yeah.
I can't even tell.
I know that the original proposal of PHP 6 was meant to make this a common thing. If you wanted to write your code with variables and functions in Chinese, you could. But, well, it seems that the person that proposed this was concerned about these words in foreign languages, that making upper and lower version is not so versions of to match names during the execution of PHP to see
maybe they wanna make the convention similar to what Java does with a camel case script, such as I guess Ruby as well requires that. Because well, each object
from what I understood, the idea is to avoid the overhead. Because if you want to see if a name is the same but with a different case, you have to probably map all to lowercase or all to uppercase and compare the versions of the names. And if you are using non-ASCII characters and you are using, for instance, UTF-8, some characters will be mapped to 2 bytes or maybe more in some idioms, some languages. And I think the person in question wanted to avoid that overhead. But the problem is that it will cause major backwards incompatibilities. And I don't know if that headache would be worth making all case insensitive, actually case sensitive. And I think the main concern is to be performance. And anyway, the discussion on this proposal practically died, so I don't think it will go anywhere.
Right.
Anyway, moving on, another proposal that will probably go on because it seems to be useful and does not cause any backwards incompatibilities in PHP is the possibility to have to when you call a function that has optional arguments, you can skip some of the arguments and specify the last ones. Because this is an interesting feature of PHP, which probably makes it more flexible than other languages that do not have this thing, which is the optional values. And the parameters, because this allows, for instance, if you want to evolve your code and now you want a certain function to have a new parameter, you can add that parameter and assume the default, so old code that used to call the version with less arguments will still work. And the idea, this proposal, I think it was from Stas Malyshev, whom is a one of the maintainers of the PHP 5.4, although this proposal does not seem to be related, is the possibility of, if you have several optional arguments, parameters to a function, you can, in the call, you can skip some of the middle optional parameters and only specify it's one or more of the last parameters. And I can see certain cases on which this would probably be interesting, because it would allow you to change the default values on some of those skip parameters. And it seemed the proposal got some acceptance and probably will be implemented in a future PHP release. Well, you'll see. Personally, I find it interesting. And then during your so-called day job, you work more with Java.
Yes.
I suppose Java does not have optional parameters in functions, right?
No. You have to specify them all. But ActionScript require, you can specify some fields with a predefined value, such as null. And if it's not passed, then it takes the default. But Java doesn't.
Well, for me it's very interesting, and I think it's one of the advantages of PHP that it's rarely discussed, which is the possibility of those optional parameters. And moving on with our podcast, we are going to talk a bit about yet another discussion against PHP. There is this article with the title PHP, a fractal of bad design, which goes through an extensive list of, I would say, inconsistencies or things that you can say that in PHP are a result of something that was not well designed of PHP as a language. And I think it this discussion that showed up, a lot in many sites. I think in the Hacker News, forums, it was forums discussed a lot. And when I found this article, it was basically a tweet by Jeff Atwood, one of the founders of the Stack Overflow site, and he's the well known by his alias Coding Horror, and he has a lot of articles related with programming, and for which he has a lot of followers. And I found a tweet by him that basically says that PHP sucks, but it still doesn't matter. Well, he says it still doesn't matter because in 2008 he already wrote an article precisely with that title, on which he was commenting that despite all the problems at PHP, PHP is a very popular language no matter what. So from what I understood, basically he was saying that it's sort of pointless to complain about PHP because that does not affect PHP popularity. In my opinion, PHP popularity came from the fact that it was a language created for creating web applications. And since the web got very popular, PHP also got very popular. Mm-hmm. Other languages followed, but to provide better support for web programming, but they came out later. And other than that, several killer PHP applications made PHP so popular that it's going to be impossible for any other language to defeat it, at least in the web field. I am thinking about, for instance, WordPress. And other applications written in PHP that make PHP like a plague. You can't get rid of it. And this is very, very interesting because although we PHP developers already know very well those deficiencies of PHP, we don't bother because we already got used to those deficiencies. So it doesn't matter for us if somebody claims with a well-thought article with all the arguments against PHP, because it won't change our minds. We work with PHP, we make money with PHP, and although we reckon that other languages are probably better designed, it will hardly make a difference for us. And that was one point. Another point is that all these articles, PHP sucks, and PHP should be banned, or whatever their intentions.
Yeah, I guess this goes with the maturity level of the writer.
Yeah. Well, it's not just that. I think all these people that complain about PHP have an agenda to promote somehow the language.
Oh, sure. And it's and, it's sort of a maturity thing as well, because you see some analogies that, you know, they compare Yoda with etc. And then you see... you know, you see the drill, but it's not just that a Yoda is something immature, but I'm bringing the funny part here, which it's like in order to be somebody you have to be a Jedi, and this is not a Jedi thing and stuff, and then you see the drill, you see the whole dilemma about who came in first, the egg of the or the chicken, and they go around, and then you don't see much of a well concise frustration about it. I mean, okay, there are better languages, but if you have to do it with a small footprint and you don't have RAM enough within your server to host a website, and you need to have a blogging system right off the hand, or you need a forum. I've seen lots of other Java community sites which use this PHP VB as their bulletin board.
Right.
So the point is, there is no point in complaining about a specific language, otherwise there wouldn't be different languages. It's like complaining because you don't like to speak English or you don't like to speak Portuguese, yeah. And you never speak anything in Portuguese because it's ugly, and it goes nowhere. I mean, it's another language. So if you need to communicate with a team that only speaks French, you'll have to learn French, or they would have to understand your English, or
yeah. But what I think is that those people that are complaining, for some reason they had to face a job on which they are mandated by their bosses or whoever to use PHP and shut up. And that's probably that was annoying them so much.
Oh, I see.
So they hope that writing these high-impact articles, well described with all the arguments against PHP. They hope that somebody sees the light and stops using PHP.
Yeah, but it's like you working in Brazil and you don't like Portuguese Brazilian because you're from Portugal. And you complain because everybody here speaks Brazilian Portuguese. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're in Brazil, so you have to speak Brazilian Portuguese.
Right, and, in Rome you have to be a Roman.
Yeah. And try to go to a certain country where they are very nationalistic about their rules. We all know that France has a very strict language rule, and it's very hard sometimes to get something out of them by just throwing out English. And because people are traditional, so they prefer to keep their patriotism. Yeah.
Well, but in their country, they are entitled to demand that everybody speaks their language. But if they are tolerant and if they are friendly, they should somehow allow that. The fact is that not everybody knows French or had the opportunity to learn French. Although if you go to France, you should somehow learn the basics.
Yeah, but let's put it this way. You need a customer service and you are in a different country. Will you request for them to speak in English with you? Okay, if it's a prime thing and you're paying for it, then it makes sense to request that. But otherwise, you have to speak their language. There is no point. And this is where I feel it should be compared to, not a Java versus PHP versus Ruby versus Python, it goes nowhere, I mean.
Yeah, and another thing that they also learn is that besides adapting to the fact that the world uses a lot of PHP and sometimes you have no choice, and if your boss says that you have to use PHP, either you use it or maybe you leave the company. But other than that, PHP is the great Kool-Aid. Actually, I don't know if you are familiar, but for those that are not aware, this is the PHP Kool-Aid. This is the PHP drink.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see.
If you're thirsty enough, you have to drink it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, now for those that are wondering, this is sort of a souvenir that I got when I was a very long time ago in the International PHP Conference in Germany, in Frankfurt, and there is an expositor, a company that I think they're no longer operating for.
Have you taken a sip of out of this drink? I mean,
No. Oh, it's I pretend to be drinking it, but as you may see, it does not have ever been opened. Actually, it's probably poisoned by now because it expired.
It's kind of radioactive right now.
I got this in 2001, and it was only valid for consumption until 2003. So
wow. So it's like an energy drink which became a radioactive thing.
Probably. I don't know. I will never try it. And anyway, this is just a joke for those that keep bitching against PHP. Drink this PHP Kool-Aid and you'll be happy.
Yeah. And it would be nice to challenge them. You know, if you hate PHP so much, you should try that drink. And if you don't like it.
Why not? Adopt an elephant.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. How many languages have such a cute mascot as the elephant?
Yeah. Be animal friendly, or we will call PETA on you.
And it's clearly, you look at it and you see it's an elephant. For instance, Java, what is the Java mascot? I could not understand what kind of
it's a sort of a it's sort of a penguin, the Duke. It's a sort of a penguin. But the main logo is a coffee cup.
Oh, yeah, because Java is a drink somewhere.
Yeah,
right?
it's sort of a grain of coffee, I guess, from Java Island, I guess. Not sure about it.
So it's not even a power drink like PHP.
I'm sure it has caffeine, though. Both, I mean, both.
Probably all power drinks have caffeine.
Yeah.
And, well, cheers. More power to the PHP developers.
Sure.
Well, enough jokes. We respect every developer, of even being diehards of other languages. Actually, personally, I don't think of myself a PHP diehard. I think languages are just tools, and
you
use the appropriate tool for each job. Sometimes it's PHP, but may not be PHP, maybe JavaScript and Node.js or Java, whatever.
You're also a very well known C programmer. I mean, you know a lot of C programming, and you could write the ultra fast modules for Apache, and don't bitch about it if you'd have to. But the point
but,
is,
but I
you
won't.
Have to find the right tool for the job. Yeah, I know you won't. You're not
I
crazy.
Won't because life is too short.
Yeah, sure. And the performance increase wouldn't make sense to have all the.
Yeah. Well, anyway, enough of this topic. I hope everybody gets the message. We are not campaigning for or against PHP or any other language.
And if somebody starts complaining, we will launch a motto of, okay, stop bitching about PHP and go program and we'll go write assembly software then. Because then if you're
really a mob have elephants and go after them.
Yeah. Go write assembly and stop bitching about any language then. Go write a binary.
Write in assembly.
Yeah.
But then there'll be people complaining, oh, what kind of CPU? Would that be a CISC or a RISC? Would it be a x86 or
write for everything. Fork the code, I mean, put whatever requirements you have to do within your code to support whichever processor you're working with. So.
Yeah. Well, by the way, did you know that I think it was Joe Spolsky that, or at least an employee of his company, Fogbuzz, that developed a language named Wasabi, which is basically...
it's like a
sort
root.
Of an abstraction of a language, I think, for web programming that in the end it generates either PHP or ASP code.
Oh,
so I think he did that so he could address the market of customers that may prefer or not the Microsoft world, and PHP will run on both worlds, but if the Microsoft world customers prefer ASP or .NET or whatever is that they prefer, you can use the same code and same language to get it translated to ASP or whatever. So that's the way they found to embrace all the worlds, or at least a great part of the worlds, with a single code base. It's a sort of a meta language. Well, anyway, moving on with our podcast. Actually, we were talking about performance, and just a few days ago, it was released. Well, I'm not sure if it is. It's not exactly an RFC, but more a list of proposals for what will become the HTTP/2 protocol. As everybody knows, HTTP is the base of the web. It's the protocol by which browsers and servers communicate. And several researchers have found that it's time for it to have an upgrade. That
I've seen some blogs just to break the ice here that they specify HTTP as here the homepage. This is the homepage.
Here, the homepage. I have not seen that.
Or here, this is the page.
Expanded that way.
Yeah, here, this is the page. But at the point is, yeah. It's a protocol of communication, right? And it's improved based off on the Google. I mean, you're more familiar with that, but the new things about Speedy and Google and the draft for proposals.
Yeah. Well, I had a look at it briefly. By the time this podcast will be published, I hope it was already published an article that I'm working on to actually give an overview what are the proposals, what is being thought to be the HTTP 2 version.
And one concern I had is why wouldn't they change it to HTTP 1.2?
Well, and if somebody maybe they want to make it look as something bigger. But yeah, because, I don't know if that old. Is...
Or probably we'll go with the Web 2.0 thing.
Oh, right.
I mean, if they are marketeers.
Even a protocol.
Yeah, but if they are marketeers, I mean, now the web is exactly 2.0, if HTTP is 2.0.
I don't know if that is what you had in mind, but HTTP 2, one of the concerns is that it should be backwards compatible, so browsers and servers that do not speak the version 2 of the protocol will still work and will still be able to talk with each other in HTTP 1 or 1.1. And so HTTP 2 being backwards compatible, it could be well be called HTTP 1.2. Why not? I think the main idea is to give a perspective that this is a major upgrade, although it will be still backwards compatible. But I understood, the idea is that the first connection to the server is to verify if it supports HTTP 2 protocol or not. It doesn't support, it will keep talking in HTTP 1.1 or 1.0, if that's the case. But if it is able to upgrade the protocol of the communications, it will be able to take advantage of the new way to operate. And the new way to operate is somewhat different, because first it will be what we already know about WebSockets. For those that are not really familiar with the idea of WebSockets, it's basically a way to communicate with the server. It will be bidirectional. So
yes, and probably it will focus also on mobile systems as well, right? Because it's now the next big thing.
Well, there are some concerns regarding mobile connections, because if you send very large packets, the communication may break down, and it will make it much slower than it should be.
And binary as well.
Yeah, but continuing to what I was saying, one of the concepts that is being adopted for HTTP 2 is the WebSockets that allow bidirectional communication. But another aspect is the sort of adoption of another protocol named SPDI. I think it should read it Speedy. And it's basically a protocol, from what I remember, it was defined by Google, and it is already implemented in the Chrome browser and also recently in the Firefox browser. And several servers, several sites support it already. I think the Google search supports Speedy protocol, and it seems that's the main reason why it's so fast. The interactions between the browsers and servers are very fast. One thing that it allows to work in a very usable way is those sort of instant searches that while you are typing your search terms, you can already see the results page, and it appears very fast. You already notice that it's already there. And anyway, Google implemented this protocol. They built it in Chrome. As I said, Mozilla implemented it in Firefox in very recent releases. And one good thing that Google provided for those that want to take advantage of this SPDI protocol is the use of actual implementation of Apache extension that will convert the interactions between the server and the browser using well, this Apache extension, and on the server side you continue to write your applications the same way, but you still have some benefits of this PDI protocol. Well,
yeah, just giving a glance here on this, the items I've seen that they have proposals for one connection per domain, which is kind of neat. If you would,
right.
If you would like represent like Facebook. Let's put it this way: Facebook has several child applications within their servers. So how redirects would be done, and there's a lot of things to read about here, as well as compression of contexts, which we already have within web services, but it's not built into the protocol.
It's basically a single socket connection.
Yeah,
that's why there is this.
Yeah, they have server
socket protocol.
Yeah, I just naming some of those. I mean, one connection per domain, fixed versus variable length feuds, compression contexts, unidirectional streams, data of compression, server push, some security considerations as well, such as HTTP headers and speedy headers, cross-protocol attacks, and server push implicit headers, I mean. So probably there will be some particularities when you're talking push notifications and stuff.
Yeah.
And
from what I understood, it is since it is all over one single socket connection, as opposed to what we have now. For instance, if you access a site, it returns a web page. Then the browser will have to fetch these CSS files and JavaScript files separately, and eventually those are done over different connections. And the way this SPDI protocol seemed to work, from what I read up, I'm not sure if this is accurate, it will be a sort of multiplexing of data that is being transferred from between the browser and the server. And for instance, if you request images and they are from the same domain, you can request several images and they come from the server simultaneously in the same connection. And this reminds me a protocol that I have studied, implemented actually a client recently, which is the one that is used by Git. You know Git version control. Systems that became very popular recently. Since I had developed a class to support that protocol to import packages from Git repositories, I had to study the protocol, and most of the data exchanges are done in binary. Well, practically all the exchanges are done in binary, although they work on top of HTTP. And with a single request, you can do a Git clone, which is basically retrieve all the information of the files and revisions and all the things. And you can do with it with a single request. And that seems to be basically the idea that is being implemented with the SPDI protocol. For what does this matter for people that develop PHP applications? Well, as I said, to support this eventual evolution, because the current HTTP version will work differently from the HTTP 2, there needs to be a sort of a migration path, and Google is providing a SPDI, which is a module that will convert the requests and responses between browsers and servers, so you can continue to use your regular PHP applications, make the same assumptions, the headers that you receive, the way that you generate the responses that are sent to the browser, and this module will do the conversions. So you don't have to be concerned on changing your application, at least for now, to take advantage, at least part of the benefits. But for other benefits, I think, like the interactivity, the ability to communicate between the browser and the server, I don't know if the way PHP works now would not have to be rethought. This is still a matter of study, but I'm sure there will be enough motivation, because everything will be very much more interactive. The communications, requests and responses between browser and server will be much faster.
Yeah, and what do you think? Do you think that this will be happening at the same pace as HTML5, or do you think it will be promoted quicker? because most of the HTML5 are required the browsers to you to adopt them as well, right?
Well, basically, this is a protocol that is somewhat agnostic to the actual applications. It does not matter the way the data is is transmitted between browsers and servers. It does not matter much to the browsers.
Yeah,
they just follow the protocol, and it's not that complicated. But once it is implemented, which is the case already in Chrome and Firefox, everything will work. It's implemented in the SPDI, and the SPDI is one of the proposals for HTTP2. The final HTTP2 specification will be something that has to be agreed between proponents of several ideas. Not necessarily it will be something compatible with the SPDI.
Right. But do you think would it be compatible? I mean, not compatible, but... Do you think it would be adopted by most of the browsers by the time HTML5 is completed, or do you think it will be started to be implemented at in the end of HTML5 specification?
Well, the problem is HTML5 is that it's not a single thing. HTML5, first, it's not HTML that people are talking about. It's not the tags. It's basically the API, JavaScript APIs. And part of the problem is that many of those APIs the specification is not finished. So
and you have some specific handlers like WebKits and Firefox has its own system of rendering graphics, such as Chrome and Safari uses WebKits. I'm not sure what the IE uses. But the point is, do you think that HTML5 specification would be benefited by this new protocol? I mean, of course, with the web, but we already have WebSockets on HTTP 1.1, so that's the main idea here. Do you think it would benefit?
I don't know because the things are independent. Applications need to be adapted to take advantage of the new features, being either on the HTTP protocol or on the HTML5 APIs. It's not automatic. You have to write specific code to take advantage of those features.
Yeah.
At least part of the features, like the possibility to interact between browsers and servers, provided either by WebSockets or SPDI or whatever it will be called in HTTP2. Well, anyway, we have to wait and see. This is still a very recent topic. As I mentioned, it's an article that I'm working on, and it will hopefully be available in the first days of May. We are recording this at the end of April, so it's just a matter of waiting and see. Anyway, by the time this podcast is being published, I think that article is already live. It's just a matter of going there and reading more about the details.
But yeah, I just hope that most of the libraries, JavaScript libraries and server-side libraries wouldn't have to be concerned about the big changes, and if it would be able to, let's say, work on both 1.1 if the browser doesn't support it, the requesting browser doesn't support HTTP2, then if it would be transparent to the PHP application or to the JavaScript application.
Yeah.
So this is where I'm concerned about, because then you would see, such as JavaScript, you have to test browser functionality, and it's always a pain. So you would have to test a protocol, and it's always a pain, and it's always adding complexity to an existing code. And that's where my drama comes on.
Yeah.
And regarding the HTML5 specification, it could be that in order to be a HTML5 compliant browser, it would have to implement the HTTP 2.0 specification. I mean, in the end, they could vote for it, but I'm not sure if it will happen. But I hope
things are independent.
Yeah,
you can implement HTML5 APIs and on top of HTTP 2. Protocol or HTTP 1 and vice versa. Anyway, for those concerned about the PHP applications, the current PHP applications will still work. What you may consider in the future is to somehow take advantage of these features to implement something that will be more efficient, because most of these new things in the HTTP2 are meant to achieve greater performance. And just to close this topic, just a reminder that there was a class submitted by, I think it was Nathan Brewer from the United States, that implemented the server side.
Yeah, I remember it.
Implementation of the WebSockets protocol, and it was all done in PHP. It created a separate process for each connection, and the PHP code would be called, and from then on it would be a part of the PHP to take advantage of these WebSockets possibilities of interactivity. But anyway, let's move on with our podcast. We are reaching our end, and the next topic with one of the regular sections on which we comment. Classes that have been published in JS classes site, and we're just going to comment a few of those classes. There are not many classes objects, JavaScript objects, published recently in the JS classes site, and let's take a look. There have been a couple of classes. Actually, one of them was written by me. This Smooth Progress bar, which is basically a class that implements a progress bar that appears very smoothly on the screen.
And does since you were
its position very smoothly.
Yeah, and since you were the writer of it, are you using any functionalities of WebKit and or you're just using CSS3 and?
No. There's nothing fancy. Basically, what this object does is when you update the position of a progress bar, if the next step jumps to many positions in the progress bar, the way it appears it is that the position of the progress bar will increase smoothly over time. It doesn't jump directly to the final position.
Right.
And it gives a nicer appearance of the progress bar, and since it's not so sudden, the user can see what is happening very clearly, and hopefully this will give a nicer way of showing the progress to the users. And
this can be used to upload files or to perform some server tasks, right?
This is a generic JavaScript component. It can be used to show progress of any task that is going on the server. Eventually, there could be some interaction with the server, but that it's not the role of this
right.
object to perform. It just shows progress and updates the position of our smoothly. Anyway, Hernani, do you want to comment on
yes.
class? That
yes, the class that I will comment on was the other component that was submitted within this month. And the author is from Ghana, which I've never seen before within JS classes, as far as I can recall. And he's aged 25. His name is Archzilon Eshun Davis, or Daves. I've seen that there are some particularities of speaking Daves or Davis, so I will try to be general here, and sorry if I mention it wrong. Yes, but the object seems to be very flexible for AJAX requests. It's a common component already. Everybody knows what AJAX means. If it doesn't, it's a asynchronous JavaScript and XML communication between the browser and a particular server. And this falls back into the specific components within Internet Explorer, which is always a struggle to develop with because of the inconsistencies between APIs. and it does fall back within HTVX components within existing in the IE. So it tests for those functionalities, and you can have with using the by using this library, you can interact with AJAX and don't care about browser incompatibilities, which is always an advantage if you're short on time or if you're not into looking into the specifics of each browser and you want to achieve a very nice result. And I feel that you should try to use this component. It's very nice. The name of it is XHR.
Right. This is the function, as you said, the function of this object is very simple, just to send in AJAX requests and call some callback functions that you provide, and it will let you integrate your application with AJAX requests in a way that works in all browsers. And it's despite it's very simple, it's always good to have a contributor from Africa, in the case from Ghana, because we don't have many in there, and we like to always encourage everybody, not just from Africa but from everywhere, to keep sending their objects. This is a JS classes site. Like the PHP classes site is a very global site. There are practically authors from all countries, and everybody is welcome. And other than that, I would like to encourage every author, not just from the JS classes site, but also PHP classes site, to keep sending their components. And in this case, Arch Zeeland. Is also a contributor to a PHP classes site, and he is now participating also in the PHP classes and the JS classes site, like many other authors. But everybody is welcome to send their components, and we always be talking about the most relevant components they send to either site. And this is part of the reason why you are talking here about JS classes site components that have been published, as a form of encouragement to everybody to keep contributing. But moving on to the another regular session on which we comment about the latest components published in the PHP classes site that had been nominated for the Innovation Award edition of January. Actually, yes. February, and there were like six nominees, and this time, which components would you like to mention, Nani?
Yes, I've picked two. The first one, which is untrivial to me, I've never seen it before. I wasn't even aware that Groupon had an API, and the name of the component is Groupon API as well. So a Groupon API client, and basically what it does is it can retrieve the list of divisions, deals, and individual deals details, and it can send HTTP requests to the Groupon Services API web server to perform operations on deals of Groupon. And this is very nice for, let's put this way, participating portals that shares offers there. So they can have their own offers within their own system and use the Groupon API to publicize those. So it's very nice. The contributor is a Portuguese from Portugal, Fernando André. Yeah, and I mean, he's a Portuguese speaker, but he's from Portugal, which is not trivial. I don't think I've seen much Portuguese contributors here, so this is was very funny to say. And Fernando André, congratulations. It's nice to see this coming forward. He has 29 years and probably has a bright future ahead. Congratulations. And the other component is related with image functionalities. I'm not sure if this component uses any particular library within PHP, such as GD or something. But
it uses GD for the actual resizing, not for reading or writing the GIF format.
Oh, I see. So yes, it's a PHP GIF resizer. GIF animation resizer is the name of the class. The author is from Turkey. His name is, as far as I can see, Taha Paksu. Sorry for the difficulty here. Sometimes it can...
We always say it's wrong, don't worry.
Yeah.
I hope the people will understand.
He was nominee 2 times already and winner on 1 time. So yes. Congratulations again to be here. This class resize animations for in files of the GIF format. So if you have animated GIFs and you're concerned about them being resized within PHP, you can see it's possible. I never seen the requirements about it, but it's nice to see that it can be possible with PHP. So very good.
Right. Yes, there was one class that deals with reading and writing animated GIF pictures, that was submitted many years ago. I think it was I have an hard time saying the correct name. Somebody named Laszlo something. I would not be able to spell the name correctly, even if I remember, because it's too many new letters to me. And basically, it is to read and write animated GIF files. And for some reason, there seemed to have been a revival of GIF images, animated GIF images, because it's a way to send pictures to a site and make them appear animated. And there are many social networks that like to show these kind of pictures, and but they have to be in the right size. So that's why this class from Taha Paksu is very useful. And I hope he continues to send more great classes like this. On my part, I also would like to mention a couple of the classes that I thought it would be interesting. One, which is basically to somehow replicate the functionality provided by the PayPal site, which is sent to emails with payment requests to a given address. I think PayPal provides this feature a little bit, but you have to log in the PayPal site and send the request. But in this case, Mubashir Ali from the Pakistan created a class that does it all in PHP, so do not rely on the PayPal site. You can have a script that uses this class to send the payment requests to user by email. So kudos for Mubashir for providing this class. And another somehow unusual class that I would like to mention is this CDB backup, also again by Archilo Ashton Davis. As I mentioned, he is also a contributor of the PHP classes site, and he was nominated for sending what apparently seemed to be yet another class to generate MySQL database backups. But in this case, what he does, it is something somewhat different. Instead of generating the actual backup files, and usually those backup files are SQL statements. Right. Basically, a list of SQL statements that will be saved to a file, so they can restore the database by executing those statements. But this class does something a little different, which is to generate an actual PHP script that generates the actual backup. So instead of doing the live backup immediately, it generates a PHP script, and you can use that script elsewhere, and it just does that, or that you need to take a backup of certain database tables. And it's a different approach to take a backup of the MySQL database. Well, basically, this concludes our podcast. I think it was a
videocast, right?
Right. Well, I think it's all a podcast.
Or Hangouts, or Hangcast, probably.
Well, I don't know. I don't think.
I'm not hanging, but.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
What Google is calling these kind of recordings that have live transmission is Hangouts on Air.
Oh, I see.
It's a quite long name for something that that we are already doing now in video, which is a podcast. So I think we will continue to call it a podcast.
Yeah. And,
for me, I think it was a great experience. Not only you can see our beautiful faces, and you can also see elephants. And
a Commodore 4000 on top of it.
Amiga, so. Commodore Amiga, that one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to point it in another.
Sometimes very hard. And it's I see a PS3. I see a PS3 on your left side.
That's a more recent generation. It's my son.
Oh, I see.
He's on the other room playing frantically those PlayStation games. You can also see the PHP Power Drink.
And, yeah, I think I have some. I think I have some gadgets on top of my. I have a very old keyboard from Apple. I have an RC.
That is
controller
very interesting. And, PhD
and a Chinese relevant. Media server, a media backup thing. Yeah, I mean, it's technology in the end, so we are all.
Yeah.
I see. I
so
had
that's,
a
that is the advantage of doing it all in video.
Yeah, and by the way. Well. I guess this goes to the future of things. I mean, we'll all be conferencing eventually and working from home. And I see this technology as a very positive thing. I use, when I need to learn something, I use all those video references and screencasts all the time, and it helps a lot. And eventually we can have some special screencasts here by sharing presentations and stuff. So it's very good to see those technologies coming forward.
Yeah, and other than that, besides the showing whatever gadgets we have at home where we are recording, I think when it was great. I did not use it much in the lately in JavaScript podcast, but in this podcast, I remember I could use it to show the actual pages of the components that we are talking about, and that's probably more interesting than showing our faces to the public.
Yeah, sure.
And this over time, we'll get used to do that more often and show other things that maybe some code or things that that are relevant to the topic that we are showing. And other than that, one thing that I wanted to mention, I don't know if I am doing anything wrong, but when I announced this podcast a few days ago, and other people can participate. Everybody is invited to participate. Up to 10 people can participate in the actual recording. Any remaining people can still watch the podcast recording live. But for some reason, or maybe that's not the way it's supposed to work, the invitations that I sent out in the Google Plus are not being... are not reaching people. I thought it would get people by email, but it doesn't seem the case. I thought it would probably show in the notifications of Google Plus, but for some reason it did not go out. But now, after this first episode, I hope everybody pays more attention and can participate. I hope also I can announce it with more time in advance, so people can schedule some time. The only thing that will probably be hard is to schedule the recording to a time during the day to be more convenient for everybody in the different parts of the world to also attend. But those that can attend, if they were not aware, now you should be aware that it's possible to participate in the podcast. And I hope to see you all in the next episodes of the podcast. Hernani, what were your thoughts about this different type of participation?
Yeah, I really liked it, and I had a souvenir to give to the users at the end of this podcast, but I'm not sure if I will be able.
Oh, it's a surprise.
Yeah. It's just a silly end thing, and I wanted to show by sharing my screen. Let me just see if I can do it.
Can you activate the screen sharing?
Yeah, I'm trying to, but
you're not
you know, I'm having some problems here. I'll leave it for the next episode so we can have more users in person.
Ah, no.
But yeah.
Do you have something? Oh, my glasses have... on.
You get better with the mustache.
To see it closer.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm showing you some small character things, you have to be able to read it. I unfortunately don't have any papers to show you.
Well, let's leave that surprise to the next episode.
Yeah,
maybe you can rehearse a bit so you can show it with more time. Well, yeah. Well, on my behalf, that is all for now. It was a great pleasure to be in this podcast, and hopefully in the future editions, more people can come and make this experience richer. So for me, that's all for now.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate being here.
Bye.
Bye-bye.